but it still took her by surprise when the driver swung suddenly into the gateway. She buzzed the door number, and the gates groaned open onto the mews courtyard.
Alex?
As Alex approached, Caroline Mortimer opened her red door as far as the door chain would allow.
Hi, Caroline.
Hold on one sec. Caroline deftly closed the door, jingled the chain, and threw the door wide open. As she did, Alex could see she was slim with a pixie hairstyle and tight-fitting jeans. She reached out to shake Alex's hand with a wide smile.
Hi, come right in. Would you like a coffee or a tea?
Caroline wasn't what Alex was expecting. Far from a vulnerable, unreliable young girl, she was confident and clearly spoken.
I've been thinking about this since you called, Caroline had said, apropos of nothing, as she boiled the kettle. And I would be happy to be named. I mean, happy isn't the right word, but I'm not ashamed. Name me in your article if that helps.
The two women sat in the small living room, scrunched onto a two-seater sofa with brightly colored cushions, the iPhone recording on Alex's knee.
I thought after I gave my statement that I'd help them do a drawing of his face.
Caroline laughed bitterly.
You know, like they do in films. But they gave me my bus fare and said they'd call if they found him.
Did they ever call?
No, Caroline said, shaking her head. I never heard anything else, until you got in touch anyway. I'm surprised no one connected you and Amy before now. It seems like there are some obvious parallels to me. Even if they were coincidental, they should have been looked at.
Yeah, but she was a nice grammar school girl, and I was a kids' home reject who got drunk and went to the common with boys. No parallels there.
You seem so together, though. I'd never have guessed you had a troubled past.
Well, thank you. That's been hard fought, believe me. If you'd seen me back then, you wouldn't have thought so. I lost some years. Drugs, the wrong men, the usual stuff. Having Toby changed everything. He was my chance to do things properly.
Caroline reached to the bookshelf behind and showed Alex a picture of a smiling little boy in school uniform.
How old is he? 6. He's amazing. I'm really lucky.
Do you work?
Yes, Caroline said crisply. I work with sex workers, women and men.
Oh, wow. Do you help them get out of prostitution?
No, not exactly. I'm not a miracle worker, but I mentor them. Help them access medical help, fill in housing forms, work with social services when their kids come under care orders.
She flashed her eyes briefly at Toby's happy little face.
It's bloody hard, but every shift is worth it.
Caroline, I know it's painful, but could you take me through what happened that night?
Of course. I knew I'd need to. It's not like I've ever forgotten it anyway. Not really.
So, what do you want to know?
Start at the beginning.
Where did you meet him?
I'd been to the King's on the High Street in Edenbridge, playing pool and drinking handouts. I was pretty drunk. That counted against me, you know. It always does with girls. I walked down the High Street towards the railway station and caught a bus. He got on afterwards and sat in front of me.
Where were you headed?
Out to Hever. I had temporary accommodation there, and it was too far to walk in the dark.
Did you know where he was going?
No, he didn't tell me.
Caroline looked down.
Or, I don't remember. He'd been sitting there for a minute or two, and he turned around and smiled at me. He asked me my name, and I told him it was Charlotte. That was the name of one of the girls I'd shared a room with. I honestly don't know why I lied. He told me his name was Graham.
Caroline winced.
It's such a cliché, but one thing led to another. I hate that expression, but it's true. He came to sit next to me on my seat and slid right up close to me. He was very handsome and he had a nice smile. There wasn't anything dodgy about him at all. He was really tall. I don't know how tall exactly, but a lot taller than me and a lot stronger.
Did he tell you anything about himself? Alex asked. Anything you remember, even if it seems trivial?
I know we talked about work at first. I told him I worked in a shop, and he said he wanted to help people.
That sounds really cheesy now, but I was very young. That made him seem like a good person. He had booze with him, a bottle of whiskey in his jacket pocket, and that was enough for me. We had a snog while we were still on the bus. I remember thinking he was gentle and relaxed. Caroline's eyes filled with tears. It was nice to have that type of attention. I thought he was really kind for offering to share his drink. And then we got off the bus and I realized we weren't where I thought we were. The fresh air must have sobered me up because I realized it was a bad idea and I asked him to walk me home. And what did he say? He was really calm and he just said, "No, Charlotte, we need to finish what we've started." I'm not saying you should have, but did you try to run away? I didn't want to make a fuss, Caroline said with a damp laugh. I didn't know which way to go and felt like I'd done something wrong by changing my mind. I kept apologizing. I said I was sorry, but I really needed to go. And that's when he went for me. "It's okay, take your time," Alex said. I don't really know exactly what he did because it was so dark, but he was very fast and heavier than he looked. I was on the floor before I knew what was happening. I could feel him tying my hands behind my back and it really hurt. I said, "No, you don't need to do that. I'll do it. You know, I'll do it with you. Just don't hurt me." But he just laughed and carried on. Then my jeans were off and he was on top of me. He seemed to like it most when I struggled, so I struggled more so he'd finish quicker. "Oh, God," Alex said, before she could stop herself. "I know. You develop a strange logic, but it worked. It was all over quite fast. He told me to stay there or he'd hunt me down and kill me. I believed him." Caroline took a deep breath. He put his hands on my throat and left them there for a really long time, not squeezing or anything. Then he just cut my hands free. I could hear him stepping away and the bracken snapping under his weight. I was too scared to look around, but I heard a car engine. A car engine? Did you tell the police that? I think so. It was quite close by, so either someone was waiting for him, or he'd left his car there. I guess it could have been someone unconnected, but I don't know why anyone would have been there that late. Alex thought again about Graham and Tom. Could she have been looking for one person when it was two all along? She remembered Matt saying how unlikely that was. But unlikely was not the same thing as impossible. "I'm so sorry you went through this on your own, especially when you were so young. How long did you stay there?" "All night. I even slept a little bit. Curled up next to a big tree with a load of bracken over me like something out of the Jungle Book. The sun came up and I started to hear cars nearby, so I made my way to the road. I was too scared to summon a lift in case he was in one of the cars, checking up on me. I managed to walk home and sat in the bath for hours, trying to work out what to do. I didn't have anyone to ask for advice, so I flipped a coin and decided I'd go to the police. By the time I got there, I was shaking violently. I felt really ill by then too, sort of hollowed out and freezing cold. I must have looked a state. I mean, I had soaking wet hair and makeup all down my face. The policeman behind the desk took one look at me and ushered me into this little room with a towel for my head and a cup of tea, but I was shaking too much to drink it. It just spilled everywhere. "I'm glad someone looked after you at least," Alex said. "I wouldn't say that." He sort of threw the towel at me and rolled his eyes. I waited for a long time, maybe an hour, and then two different policemen came in. "No female officers?" "They said I could ask for one, but it could be hours. I decided to tough it out." "Were you examined?" "No. They said there was no point as I'd had a bath and he'd used a condom." Alex shook her head and thought of Matt. The debates they'd had over expensive dinners. Him forever championing the force, the strength of character and moral rigidity of his colleagues. Her sloshing 12-pound glasses of wine as she'd argued with him. They'd usually end up laughing about something else. "It's over 15 years ago," Caroline said carefully, "and some of it is so hazy that I don't know if I've rewritten it in my head. I couldn't tell you how long I sat in the bath, or which day of the week this all happened on. I couldn't tell you the exact order of things or even some of the details about him. But there are some things that are razor sharp. So sharp I try to forget them, but they pull me up short and hit me out of nowhere. Like his eyes, Caroline continued, turning to look at Alex. I'll never forget his eyes. Caroline, if I showed you a picture, do you think you'd recognize him? Caroline looked panicked, as if Alex had said he was standing outside the door. Yes, I'm absolutely certain I'd recognize him. I've never forgotten, no matter how hard I've tried. Hang on. Do you know who he is? I don't know for sure, but there's someone I have a funny feeling about. He could be totally unrelated, though. Sorry, the photos are a bit dodgy. They were taken in a rush. Who is he? Do you know if he's done this kind of thing again? Is he the one you think hurt your victim? He's just someone that's come to my attention while I've been researching this story. To be honest, I almost hope it's not him. Can I show you? Alex asked. Okay. Caroline inched away slightly as Alex picked her phone back up. Alex opened her phone's photo gallery and found the batch of pictures she'd snapped hastily in Sue and Graham's living room. Most of these probably aren't clear enough as I took them in such a hurry, but I've left them all in just in case there's anything useful. Just scroll through in your own time and tell me if you recognize him. I don't want to lead you in any way. Caroline scrolled with shaking hands, squinting at the pictures, some of which were obscured by the flash bouncing off the frames. At the last one, she narrowed her eyes and suddenly recoiled and stood up, still holding the phone. She pointed to the screen, eyes wide in terror. That's him. Oh my God, that's him.
Chapter 69. Amy. Sometime in 2010. Well, I know how the dream ends now. It wasn't a surprise, really. The writing has been on the wall with every previous showing, but that didn't make it any less horrible. It was like I was watching it happen to someone else, like a horror film, and I was screaming, "Run! No!" But my voice just bounced off like there was a glass screen in the way. For all my screaming, it changed nothing. Now it's clinging to me like a stink. I can't shake it like a normal dream, and maybe I shouldn't shake it just yet. Maybe I need to face it. Problem is, I'm just too scared to face it alone, and I don't have anyone to help me.
Chapter 70. Jacob. 22nd of October, 2010.
He's so perfect. I just want to eat him, Fiona said sleepily.
Jacob held his new son like he was woven from tiny twine and could unravel at any moment.
I didn't think anything could be so tiny and beautiful, he said, eyes welling up again. And so hungry.
Fiona closed her eyes and sank her head into the hospital pillow. Jacob smiled and traced his son's round pink cheek with the tip of his finger. He looked across at his wife. He'd never seen anyone do anything so brave before. He loved Fiona, liked her too, but he'd never stopped to consider her as strong until he watched her deliver their child into the world, almost in silence, save for a low, rumbling moan. He felt like he'd been pulled into the present and anchored there by the tiny little fist wrapped around his smallest finger.
I can't believe how many times you've been in this hospital before, Fiona said suddenly. I wish you'd told me. I would have understood, you know. I really would have.
I just couldn't risk it. I couldn't risk losing you, he said, kissing his baby's light blue knitted bonnet, which was slipping down over his scrunched up eyes.
I don't know if this makes any sense, Jacob said quietly as his son fell back to sleep. But the more I fell for you, the more guilty I felt. Like I was getting to move on and she wasn't,
and it wasn't her fault.
Do you still love her?
Fiona asked.
You never forget your first love, Jacob answered carefully. But I never loved her like I love you. It was different. It was kid stuff. I just didn't let it go when I should have, and then I thought I was all she had.
I can't keep sharing you, Jay. Not like before. Not now.
I know you can't. I don't want you to. I just want to be with you and this guy. I don't even want to go to the loo without him.
Fiona smiled.
You don't have to not see her again, but just, you know, from time to time. What do you think? Can you do that?
I think I should have done that a long time ago.
Listen, Fiona said, propping herself up. You're here in the hospital anyway. He's sleeping now and won't be doing much of that soon. So why don't you go and tell Amy your news while you have the chance? Tell her about the baby and explain that things need to change. Explain that you won't be back so often, like maybe a couple of times a year.
I don't know, Fee. I think I need to make a clean break. Alex is visiting Amy regularly and trying to get some kind of justice for her. I can't help with any of that, so I should just leave Amy in her hands. Amy doesn't actually need me, but you both do.
Jacob lay his tiny baby in the transparent cot at Fiona's side. A burst of warmth in his chest nearly knocked him over. He kissed Fiona on the lips for longer than he had in months, maybe years.
I love you so much, he said.
We love you too,
she answered, already half asleep.
Chapter 71 Alex 22nd of October 2010 Alex called Matt from the train to Tunbridge Wells.
Please answer, please answer, please answer, she chanted silently.
He didn't seem entirely surprised to hear from her.
I spoke to Caroline, she said excitedly. Alex, he whispered, be careful with that name, please. But you need to hear this, Matt. I know who did it. I know who did it for sure.
Is this another hunch?
No, this is cast iron, and I'm certain that the same person who attacked Amy also attacked Caroline. Caroline's willing to identify him, but only if you will handle the case. She doesn't want anything to do with the local police, but I've convinced her that she can trust you.
A door clicked. The sound of the outside came whistling down the line.
Okay, he said. Tell me everything.
Matt was due to come to Tunbridge Wells the next day, once he had taken Caroline's statement. Now Alex had to reach Jacob and fill him in before anyone else did. She'd called Jacob's mobile 6 times and left 3 messages, but no reply. There was only one place he could be. Alex got in her car at the station and broke every speed limit on the way to the hospital.
Chapter 72 Jacob 22nd of October, 2010 Jacob took the steps 2 at a time up towards Bramble Ward, adrenaline pumping through his still wonky leg. He passed the spot where he'd fallen weeks before and rushed on. Amy's cubicle curtains were closed and there were no nurses on reception. In the background, the radio babbled with the sounds of old pop music. It was No Doubt or someone like that, someone he wasn't sure at the time if he should like and hadn't had Amy around to ask. The office door was shut tight, and Jacob was just about to knock when he saw a man's black shoes and black trousers through the gap under Amy's curtain. His heart thumped and his head span a little, thick with the exhaustion of a new parent. He coughed, but no one came. He watched the black legs and feet. No orderly or nurse wore black, he slowly realized. They all wore scrubs of different colors. Suddenly, he saw the feet walk quickly in the direction of Amy's head, Jacob instinctively strode over and pulled back the curtain to see a dark-haired man leaning far too close to Amy, his hands denting the pillow heavily on either side of her face.
Chapter 73. Amy. 22nd of October, 2010. I'm still running over the dream in my head when a familiar voice breaks my thoughts. It's low, too deep to be a boy's voice, but soft for a man. At first, I can't make out what he's saying. I want to say to him, take a deep breath and speak clearly, but I can't. So I have to concentrate really hard to cut out background sounds like swishes and beeps that I've barely noticed before. Coating everything is the sound of music, a song I don't know, with lyrics that are interfering with the man's voice and crowding out my own thoughts. I finally manage to focus a little on what he's saying. I think I must have missed the most important bit, the bit that explains what on earth he's on about. I shouldn't have let it happen, he's saying. It should never have gone that far. Can you hear me? I don't know if you can hear me, he adds, sounding worried but still whispering. Who are you? I can't place you. Amy, I'm so sorry I didn't stop it before it went that far, he's saying. I knew deep down what would happen. I just didn't want to face up to it. And now look where we are. I wish someone would turn the bloody radio off. He stops talking for a bit, and even over the radio I can hear him breathing. His breaths are almost louder than his words. Maybe I should concentrate on his breathing instead, try to make sense of that. Why is he breathing hard? Why do people breathe hard? Exertion? Maybe he ran here? Or excitement, but he doesn't sound excited. Fear? Why would he be scared? I'm not scared. Maybe I should be scared. They said you might be able to talk soon. Who are they, and how do they know I can't talk? Oh God, I really can't talk. And I wanted you to know that if you can talk, you should say, why can't I talk? Why the hell can't I talk? Amy, you need to tell. I can hear curtains whooshing open, and a man starts to yell loudly. But what do I need to tell? Who do I need to tell it to? What the hell is going on the other side of my eyes?
Chapter 74. Jacob. 22nd of October, 2010. What are you doing? Jacob said, grabbing the man's shoulder and twisting it round. Jacob, said his brother Tom, open-mouthed and red-faced. Jacob staggered back and repeated the question. What the fuck are you doing? What were you doing to her? I wasn't doing anything to her. I was just talking to her. I needed her to understand. Understand what? How sorry I am. Jacob's stomach lurched. It was you, he said quietly. Holy shit, it was you! Jacob pulled Tom up by his black jacket and lunged at him, nearly knocking him onto Amy's bed. He took a wild swing, which missed. Tom covered his face and ducked, knocking the chair so it sat tangled in the curtain. My own brother! Jacob yelled as Tom cowered in the corner. The curtains opened suddenly, and Dr. Haynes and a nurse were standing aghast. The radio had been abruptly switched off, and, after a second or two, Dr. Haynes said loudly, Out! Now! Or I'll call security! Tom scrambled to his feet and ran towards the door. Jacob stumbled after him, calling, Don't you dare! Don't you dare run away again! The brothers burst out into the corridor, and Tom headed for the stairs, but Jacob grabbed him and pulled him back, holding him above the stairwell so his dark hair flapped over the steep drop below. You tried to kill her! Jacob spat, tears streaming from his eyes and hands tightening on Tom's shoulders. Tried to kill who? Tom cried. What are you talking about? Amy, you bastard! You jealous little bastard! You tried to kill Amy! Tom's eyes widened, his pale face clammy.
No! No, you've got it all wrong! Did someone help you? Who was she seeing? Was that you as well?
Jacob's words ran into each other as Tom shook his head furiously, mouth open but wordless.
You were jealous. You wanted a girlfriend like Amy. You always wanted whatever I had. You're so wrong. It wasn't me, I swear.
You're a liar.
Jacob's hands were creeping further around his brother's neck when he heard the lift doors judder open and a voice cry,
Stop! It's not him!
Chapter 75 Alex 22nd of October, 2010. The brothers looked dazed and Jacob was panting heavily. Tom slumped to the floor in front of Alex's feet and sat with his back to the stairwell balustrade, head in his hands.
He was trying to kill Amy, Jacob spluttered, swaying on the spot lopsidedly.
No, I wasn't, Tom said quietly. I was talking to Amy. I was apologizing to her.
Apologizing for what? Demanded Jacob.
You knew all along, Alex asked Tom, walking a few steps to put her hand on Jacob's arm to try to calm him down. He shook it off.
Are you Alex? Tom asked.
Yes. How did you know? Alex answered, looking between the two men.
My mum told me, Tom said. Said you were close to figuring it out.
Mum, Jacob repeated, staggering back. What the hell is going on? Jacob, Tom didn't attack Amy, Alex said, but I think he knows who did. Tom put his head in his hands and sobbed. Jacob crouched down next to him.
What the hell do you know, Tom? Tell me now.
I didn't know for sure, but I don't know who else it could be.
Were you there? Asked Alex.
No, but I'd seen them together. I saw them together that afternoon, and he took her away in his car. And she never came back.
Who?
Jacob yelled, and pushed Tom into the balustrade.
Who?
He yelled angrily.
Chapter 76 Amy 22nd of October, 2010. Simon, my secret, Simon. So it's true. It wasn't Simon talking. I knew that. But it took a while to realize who it was and that Tom was talking about what had happened, about Simon going too far, which is really the foulest understatement in the world. If it wasn't for last night's dream, nightmare, whatever, I would have thought Tom was wrong, that the too far he talked about was Simon flirting with me, or me with him, or maybe, just maybe, he was the other side of the door, or watching through the kitchen window when we had kissed. But no, last night the dream reached the end. At the time I still thought it was just a dream, but that didn't make it any less terrifying. It was still seeping away when Tom's voice sounded in my ear. Everything is silent now. No one is here to explain what's happening. No mum, no Alex, no singing woman that washes my face. I'm totally on my own again, alone with my memories. If I could feel cold, I would feel cold. If I could have started to shake, I would still be shaking. Perhaps I am, but there's just no one here to tell me that. The dream, the memories, the inevitable ending. Why I hadn't realized until now that it was a memory, I don't know. There's so much I don't know. I think Alex might know. I think this might be why she's been coming here. I'd like to hear her voice explain it to me. Mostly, though, I just really want my mum.
Chapter 77 Jacob, 22nd of October, 2010. Jacob sat in the wing-back chair of his wife's cubicle, holding his tiny baby son and staring into space. Tears welled slowly before skidding down his cheeks, all color drained from his face. Fiona kept one hand on Jacob's arm while Tom sat at the very end of the bed.
You knew all this time, Jacob said eventually, without moving his eyes from his son. You knew that Simon had attacked Amy, and you didn't say anything. I wanted to tell you, said Tom. I wanted to say something straight away, but you were in pieces. I told Mum everything, and she said not to say a word. She said there was no reason to think Simon was involved. Mum was convinced it was a coincidence that they'd been together, and it would devastate you to think Amy had cheated. She said it would break up the family.
And is that what you thought too?
I didn't want to break up the family, but that's happened anyway. Deep down, I think I knew it was him, though I didn't want to believe it. I handled it wrong. So did Mum, but I should have stood up to her.
Jacob looked across at Tom, who looked down.
Even if you didn't know for sure what happened at the end, you knew he'd swooped in on my girlfriend, my underage girlfriend, that he'd had it in him to do that. Jacob spat. That's not what normal people do. Normal people don't sleep with their brother's 15-year-old girlfriend and then disappear without a trace just before she's found almost dead.
I've got no excuse, Jay.
Fiona sat up.
Why did you go to see Amy today, Tom? Mum said she'd started to communicate,
Tom said.
That's not true,
Jacob said, looking at Fiona.
That's not true at all. She didn't say she was talking, just that she'd started to show signs of communication or something. She thought Amy might eventually be able to tell people what had happened with Simon.
Tom caught Jacob's eye.
No, Jay, he said. She didn't think Simon had attacked Amy, but she was worried people would jump to conclusions. She was worried how you'd cope.
Huh, Jacob muttered. Right.
I just wanted to tell Amy how sorry I was for not doing anything. I thought if she was in there somewhere, she might hear me and understand. I wanted to tell her that if she could hear, and if it was Simon that hurt her, then she had to let people know.
Did she respond? Fiona asked.
No, not at all. But I had to say it. I came once before,
Tom said apologetically.
And I didn't say a word to her. It was a few years ago, around the time you got married. I decided enough was enough. I had to tell the police what I'd seen and let them handle it. Mum brought me here to convince me that telling the police wouldn't make any difference to Amy. I was weak, and it worked. I lost my nerve.
What exactly did you see that day?
Asked Jacob.
I mean, really?
Tom looked up, rubbed his eyes, and ran his fingers through his floppy dark hair.
I'd seen Simon looking at Amy when she came over and things. I thought he liked her, or fancied her, or whatever.
Really? I never noticed anything,
Jacob said.
Amy noticed. I didn't realize she had, but then I saw them in the kitchen once. You were in your room, and they didn't know I was in the hall. I heard Amy and Simon laughing, and I looked through the crack in the door. I don't even know why I looked, but she was standing really close to him, playing with her hair. His hand was on her waist, and then I saw him kiss her on the lips. Just really quickly, not a full-blown kiss, just, I don't know, not an okay kiss.
Seriously?
Jacob asked.
You saw Simon kissing my girlfriend, and you didn't say anything. I'm really sorry, I didn't know what to do. I just crept upstairs and then walked back down really noisily so they'd hear me and stop what they were doing.
Did you see anything else like that?
Not until the afternoon she went missing,
Tom said quietly.
It was while you were at judo club. Simon said he had to collect something, so I was at home in my room. After a while, I heard Simon's car pull up.
Tom took a deep breath.
I heard the front door go, and I could tell he wasn't alone because I could hear a girl's voice. I heard them coming up the stairs, but I didn't realize who the girl was.
And what happened when they came upstairs? Tom looked down.
They went into your room.
My room? Jacob's face folded in shock.
Do you remember how messy Simon's room was then? He was packing all his stuff, and I thought he must have used yours because it was tidier. I still didn't realize who he had with him. I just thought it was rude to go into your room, that's all.
Why was Simon packing? Fiona asked.
He was going volunteering, going to work in Africa,
Tom said.
Simon's such a good person,
spat Jacob.
Such a good person that he slept with my girlfriend and then beat her to a pulp.
Did you know for sure that they'd slept together, Tom? Asked Fiona.
Yeah, I did. Jake, I'm so sorry. I heard Simon say Amy, but I hoped it was a coincidence. I crept out of my room and listened outside, and I could hear them in there.
In Jacob's bedroom? Fiona asked. Tom nodded, blushing.
I just hovered in my bedroom doorway. I didn't know what to do.
Tom? Fiona said, reaching with her fingertips to touch his hand briefly.
You were both so young then. You were just a boy. This isn't your fault.
Tom looked briefly at Jacob.
What happened then?
Jacob asked quietly, looking down at his sleeping baby.
Simon came out smirking, and I saw Amy straightening her clothes, the look on her face.
Tom shook his head.
She just burst into tears. I scarpered back to my room. I didn't know what to do. They went downstairs and I could hear them arguing. I couldn't hear what they were saying, but Amy was getting louder and louder. She said she'd made a mistake and that they shouldn't have done this. She was getting more and more hysterical. I don't know what he said or did, but she grew quieter and then I heard the patio door go. I came downstairs and couldn't see them anywhere, so I went back up to my room and tried to forget about it.
And then they were gone?
Jacob asked.
And then they were gone,
said Tom.
I'm so sorry.
Jacob kissed his son's tiny nose. He looked at Fiona and then finally made eye contact with Tom.
I know you are, mate,
he said.
I know you are.
Chapter 78. Alex. 22nd of March, 2011. Alex woke up early. The crisp spring day nibbled at her toes as she took a lungful of morning breath. The starched sheets were still tightly swaddled around her, but she dragged herself out into the chilly air and splashed her face with warm water from the basin. She carefully packed her medicines into the side pocket of her holdall and placed her folded clothes into the belly of it. Alex tucked her letters of apology into the other side pocket of her bag and crept into the residence lounge for breakfast. She drank several cups of peppermint tea and picked at a slice of toast and marmalade, smiling politely at the hum of conversation all around, accepting a few hugs. She loaded her bag into the taxi and asked to be taken straight to the hospital in Tunbridge Wells. The taxi had been arranged by reception, and the taxi drivers knew not to ask any questions. Alex wondered how many graduates spilled their stories anyway, programmed from weeks of group therapy. Matt was waiting for her in the cafe, cradling a cup of grey coffee, her article folded in front of him. He rose when she came in, stepping forward to meet her. For a moment, she just stood and stared, waiting for her heart to settle. He stared back, running his eyes down from the top of her head.
You look great,
he said emphatically. So do you. He always did. They hugged lightly, quickly.
How was treatment?
He asked. Oh, you know, Alex shrugged, unsure if he actually wanted to know.
I really don't know.
He looked apologetic. Well, it worked. It helped. I don't really want to...
No, of course, I'm sorry.
He gestured to the newspaper.
You did so well,
he said. I couldn't have done it without my police source, she replied and smiled. The 4-page article had been published while Alex was in treatment, and she had yet to see a copy. Her byline sat in bold type at the top, above a tiny head and shoulder shot. In the center of the first double-page spread was a picture of Amy, her arms around Becky and Jenny. All three girls were laughing wildly. A close-up of Simon, now wiry and graying, had been dropped into the second page of the article. He was definitely handsome, but Alex was surprised by how scrawny and wild-eyed he'd looked when she finally got to see him. He had arrived in court with a black eye and swollen nose. He almost looked pitiful. It had taken weeks to extradite him. He was wanted in several countries on sexual assault and rape charges under his alias, Graham Barnes. Father's first name, mother's maiden name. Highly unoriginal, but highly effective for 15 years. The prosecution had Tom and Caroline as witnesses, but Amy's school bag had never been found, and Simon's old car had long been sold for scrap. A conviction might still have been uncertain, were it not for the trial's star witness. Amy. Because of the trauma Amy experienced during her previous tennis test, it was agreed by the judge and her medical team that there would be a limit of 10 questions, and the session would be stopped if Amy became distressed. The defense and prosecution were each permitted 5 questions, to be submitted in advance. There was absolute silence in the court as the video was played. In the background, Amy lay flat in an MRI chamber, while in the foreground, Dr. Peter Haynes and his team sat pensively in the control room, screens showing Amy's brain dormant above them. With a slightly shaky voice, Peter explained the rules to Amy. She was to imagine herself playing tennis if the answer was yes, and to imagine herself relaxed and floating in warm water if the answer was no. To check the process, Peter asked quietly, "Are you Amy Stevenson?" The tennis part of Amy's brain lit up red with a halo of orange and yellow surrounding it, like the licks of a flame. The court seemed to hold its collective breath. The defense questions were read crisply by the doctor, leaving a long pause between each one. "Do you know where you are?"
"No."
"Do you know how old you are?"
"No."
"Do you know what year it is?"
"No."
"Are you in any pain?"
"No."
"Do you know who attacked you on July the 18th in 1995?
A pause. "Tennis."
After the defense had tried to discredit the confused, damaged witness, the prosecution took a different approach.
"Amy,"
Peter read from the agreed piece of paper,
"for the next series of 5 questions, you must continue to imagine yourself playing tennis for yes or affirmative, and imagine yourself relaxing in warm water the rest of the time, okay?"
There was a short pause, and then Peter's voice came over the courtroom speakers, louder and more decisive than before.
"Amy, we are now going to ask you to spell out the name of your attacker. First question. What is the first letter of your attacker's name? A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M."
As the doctor got further through the alphabet, Alex had watched the members of the public gallery leaning towards the screens.
N-O-P-Q-R-S, tennis.
An audible gasp shot from the collective mouths of the court. Sitting flanked by his defense barrister and solicitor, Simon hung his head.
"Next letter," the video voice continued, undisturbed by the reaction of the court.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, tennis. It seemed for all but Sue Arlington, the writing was on the wall. And it spelled Simon. The following week, after a long silence, the jury foreman had side-eyed Simon and finally spoken.
We find the defendant guilty.
Jacob had squeezed Fiona's hand to the right, Jenny Cross's to the left. Becky Lim had hugged Alex, and Bob had put his head in his hands and sobbed, his wife Judy by his side. Tom couldn't bear to be in the room once he'd given evidence, and had spent the final days of the court hearing looking after his little nephew. Throughout the trial, Sue had been sitting at the front of the public gallery with a hollow-eyed Graham. When the verdict was read out, she'd made a sound like an animal's howl, temporarily bringing the courtroom to a standstill. Matt picked up a salt shaker and stared at it intently. Are you okay? Alex asked.
Not really. God, Alex, your timing has always been lousy.
What do you mean? Alex asked, her chest hurting at the thought of what he might say. She considered standing up and leaving, checking out of anything even close to emotional.
You finally managed it,
Matt said, reaching for her hand. She moved it away, the thought of his touch too painful to contemplate.
Don't, Matt, please. I'm not strong enough. You're stronger than either of us knew.
I'm so sorry. She swallowed. I wish I'd managed this before. In time. Alex tangled her breathing up in the beginning of a sob and stopped.
I wish you had too. Half of me hates you for not managing it back then.
Matt said, still fiddling with the salt shaker, avoiding her eye. And the other half? Alex asked quietly, regaining some composure.
You know how the other half feels.
The whole of me feels the same. Alex looked down and watched the thick teardrops splashing onto her jeans in clumsy patterns. Matt's own scant tears had fallen onto the newspaper, a couple of thick black dots speckling the words she'd written.
Oh shit, I'm sorry,
Matt said, rubbing the damp spots and spreading them further.
I'll try to get you another copy, or maybe it will still be online.
Don't worry. I can ask them to send me one. They both wiped their eyes, cleared their throats, sipped their tepid drinks.
So, what are you going to do now? Is this your new direction?
Matt asked, his eyes still mauve around the edges, a unique colour she hadn't seen since the day he left their home. Well, the Times are taking me back on. I'm going to do a new column, and they're considering a series on forgotten crimes, so, you know, we'll see.
Will you call if I can help again?
Matt looked hopeful, and Alex found herself inhaling sharply. Well, do you think that's a good idea?
Probably not.
He smiled apologetically.
But I'd like it if you did.
Alex chewed her bottom lip. Her heart hurt like it was burning her from the inside out. She took a deep breath, worried she might leap across the table, grab him, and never let go. You know, Matt, I'm going to do the next one alone. I mean, I'm going to leave you alone. With Jane. She smiled, and fresh tears trickled a zigzagged path over her cheekbones. And with Ava. Matt looked away and breathed deeply. He rubbed his hand over his face and shook his head.
Thank you.
Bramble Ward was empty, and the nurse's station abandoned. The radio was off. There were no other visitors, and the only sound was the distant hum of the machines and the quiet orchestra of patients' breaths. Alex checked her reflection for leaking mascara, signed herself in, and walked slowly over to the corner cubicle. She sat lightly in the chair. Hi, Amy. It's Alex. How have you been? She picked up Amy's weightless hand, warming it between her own, and holding it lightly to her cheek. Alex moved from the visitor's chair and sat on the bed. Then she lay down next to Amy, still gripping her hand. She popped one earphone into Amy's left ear, the other into her own right ear, closed her eyes, and pressed play. Chapter 79. Finding Alex. Sunday Times Magazine, 3rd of April, 2011. The last time I wrote a column for this newspaper was in 2007. At the time, I was married and expecting a baby. I was also a barely functioning alcoholic who drank bourbon from one of those ceramic novelty mugs that looked like the Starbucks takeaway cup. I wish I could say that losing my baby was my rock bottom. I'm an overachiever. I managed to find several other rock bottoms. When my husband finally walked out on me and my pickled womb, I tried to write my way out of the hole. Instead, I wrote my way out of a job and into a pub. Have you heard the one about the national newspaper columnist who bangs a busboy in a bar crowded with contemporaries? Don't worry. Private Eye did. After being thrown out of my own publisher's building, I also managed the spectacular feat of being thrown out of a publisher's office where I did not work. It was only fair. I'd turned up, booze steaming from my skin like a geezer, demanding a job I'd turned down months before, a job that had long been filled. I lost days. I lost weeks. I lost everything. I woke up with strangers, unconscious in the bed I'd once shared with my husband. I hallucinated, counting glass spiders on my ceiling and willing them to cut me to pieces. I lost every single friend, irretrievably. Imagine just how badly you'd need to behave to lose every single friend, irretrievably. Eventually, I managed to pull my head above water. Just. For 18 months, I kicked wildly until my legs were so tired I was ready to be carried out to sea. If you don't stop drinking, a family doctor told me, you'll be dead in a year. I drank that night. And now I sit with bourbon-free coffee in my mug, liver damage controlled with pills, nursing the blinding clarity that comes with sobriety. That vicious clarity that alcoholics like me try our damnedest to avoid. To my surprise, I realize that, rather than grinding towards the inevitable ending of my own story, I'm still in the middle. So what changed? I found a friend. Amy Stevenson isn't an ordinary friend. She's a girl who everyone has heard of, but she's likely unaware of her fame. She's a girl who was also stuck in a deep rut. The difference between Amy and me is that she hadn't dug the rut herself, and she refused to lie down and die in it. When she could have given in and given up, she kicked and screamed and used every drop of strength she had. I saw in Amy someone with no second chance, fighting like fury to create one. And when you see that fight take place in front of you, you recognize your own second chance. It's time for me to take it, to be grateful for it, to earn it and to own it. I have no idea where my second chance leads. All I know is that I need to put one foot in front of the other, every day, forever, and to dedicate every step to my friend, Amy. Belinda hopes you enjoyed the reading of Try Not to Breathe, written by Holly Seddon and read by Katie Zobey, Jot Davies, and Lucy Middleweek. Our audiobooks are becoming increasingly popular among travellers, families, and people who are on the go. If you really enjoyed this audiobook, please introduce your friends and family to the experience. We're sure they'll love you for it. If you want to hear more about our fabulous range of titles, please visit us online at belinda.com. Thanks for listening, and remember to always take a Belinda audiobook with you.